This is Bob Biggerstaff, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast. Enjoy, guys.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey everybody, it's Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast, episode 69. We're hanging out with Bob Biggerstaff and my buddy Jimmy's hanging out.
Yeah, Pear Tree and Fenton.
What up, represent?
So welcome to the show, guys.
Oh, thanks, no problem.
So
I'm good, I'm ready to go. I'm not gonna get up and do anything or...
Not going to go anywhere.
You have my full attention.
All right.
For at least 15 minutes.
I don't know how you got in my hotel room, but whatever.
We sweet talked to the chick at the front desk.
Slipped her a 20 and gave us a key. And yeah, so we're here.
We were able to come in here, completely rearrange the room. And he walked out. He's like, oh, hey, how's it going, guy?
I'm going to lose my deposit that I didn't put down.
So, Bob is at the Volley Park Funny Bone this weekend. If you have a time machine, you can...
Bob Biggerstaff, yes. Yeah. I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
VPFB, that's where I'm playing. That's what we call in the business.
Yep.
Volley Park Funny Bone, VPFB. Sometimes I play the WFB, Westport, but I'm sure people knew that.
People don't even know about that one.
Not all the way over here in Fenton. I don't know what that means.
You come through. We were talking a little bit. You come through pretty regularly about.
We were talking a little bit earlier, and then I had to. And then 30 seconds into the podcast, I had to go to the bathroom. I just want everybody to. We're very honest on this podcast.
Yes. Yeah, no.
So we had to restart. Oh, you were saying. I come to this area quite often.
Yeah.
Now that there's two clubs, especially.
Right.
Usually about, I'll be at one or the other, usually every 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's nice that, I mean, having the two clubs, I don't know.
Well, the first time I did it, I remember it was around Thanksgiving, couple years ago when Valley Park had first, you know, the first few months it was open, and I played both of them back to back.
Yeah.
So that's nice to go somewhere.
Sure.
And be there for, you know, work for two weeks. But I was staying at the hotel that they use for Westport. So I had to drive it's only 20 minutes away.
Right.
But I had to drive every night back to the hotel.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of people in this area, and so, but it's just like it's kind of crazy that even though they are only 20 minutes apart, that we can kind of get different crowds for both clubs, and you know, like you can.
Yeah, you would think being that close would be, you would be like, you know, taking people from one area. Or taking people, you know, that probably had gone to Westport before, and now they come here.
Right.
I think people, there's been a few people that have been at the shows this weekend that have said, like, they saw me at Westport, and that's why they came over here.
Right.
And, you know, so I think some comedy, sometimes, you know, sometimes people come to see the comedian, sometimes they just come to see a show.
Sure.
So, obviously, I'm sure the majority of the people that come to Valley Park probably live closer to Valley Park than they do Westport.
Yeah. Yeah, at least they're going out to a show. That's the thing. I hear a lot of people, they don't even realize there's two Funny Bones and all the alternative rooms that they do comedy in and all this. They don't, a lot of people just are, you know, they only know comedy as, you know, like Louis C.K. and, you know, just these guys that are selling out arenas and things. And it's like, there's a...
Yeah.
All sorts of great comedy out there. It's just
Yeah, that happens. That happens in a lot of places. In Houston, I mean, Houston's a way bigger city than St. Louis, but there's only two real comedy clubs there now. I mean, you know, there used to be 25 years ago. There was like 7 or 8 places that were doing comedy every week. Now there's only two, and one's the Improv, which everybody seems to know about, and there's another club on the south side of town that a lot of people don't even really know about it. People that live around there do, but they have like a big sign that says like it says comedy, but it also it says like defensive driving, like way bigger than how it says comedy. So people are like, they just think it's, a lot of people think it's a comedy defensive driving place.
That's I think that's kind
of. But it's been there like 30 years, so obviously it worked. You know, it's working. It's a good club.
Sure, that's kind of the thing over here. The Funny Bone is that like the bird sign is more lit up than the pet store for than the.
There's a pet store there.
Yeah, right on the corner. There's a.
Oh, the Valley Park Funny Bone. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know. I mean, obviously it costs. It costs money to have a sign out by the street. And also, I mean, also you got to have a. It's not just the cost of the sign. There's permits and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know places that, like in Houston years ago, like the Laugh Stop was the big club in Houston for a long time. Like a ton of guys. That's where I got started. A ton of guys had like recorded CDs in there, like Mitch Hedberg, Tom Rhodes, who else? Joe Rogan, Doug Stanhope, ton of guys have recorded CDs there. And there was another club in town. There were two Laugh Stops at one point, kind of like here, but they were like 45 minutes away from each other. One was down right next to downtown. That was the main one. And there was another one out in the suburbs, about 45 minutes away. And they sold the one on the outskirts of town. And when the guy bought it, he changed the name from the Laugh Spot, from the Laugh Stop, to the Laugh Spot.
Yeah.
So like, all he had to do was like switch two letters on the sign, and you know, so he didn't have to like really get a new sign.
Yeah.
And that was part of the reason, you know, why he did it.
Sure.
Because he was able to save a lot of money. It also caused a lot of confusion when people would call up there and they would think it was a Laugh Stop. But yeah, I mean, Valley Park's getting better.
Yeah.
They haven't. I mean, how long has it been around? Even 2 years yet?
Yeah, I guess it had to be. I think we're getting close to 2 years. Yeah.
Actually, probably more than 2 years. Something like if that. I think about it.
I forget. I'm terrible at time.
But they. But it's getting better. You know. Yeah. I haven't had a show canceled yet. I mean, they're still tonight. We'll see.
Yeah. But yeah. So. You,
All right, are we done?
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks.
That's it. That's show, everybody.
I got to use the bathroom again. No, I'm teasing. Go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
I was going to ask about your podcast. You've been, you used to,
The record. Enjoy Guys podcast?
Yeah. You're no, newbie to podcasting. You've been, doing it for a while. And like,
Yeah, I probably haven't done it in like, if I say 6 months, it's honestly, it might have been like a year.
Right.
I'm still paying for it. That's the messed up thing.
Yeah.
I'm still paying for 20 bucks a month for the hosting of it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get back into it. Yeah, I liked... I had a friend of mine that did like probably the first 30 episodes, and then he moved to New York. We did it in Houston, and he moved to New York. So then I'd do it by myself, but I would always try to find somebody to have on the show, like to interview a comic. Mm-hmm. Like if I was at home in Houston, excuse me, I would see who was playing at the club. You know, if I wasn't working or if I was working with somebody, I would have them on the show. You know, yeah. So I got some, you know, really good comics. I mean, shoot, I got Dave Attell. Dave Attell was on the first episode. And one of the last ones, and one of the last ones he did was with it was him and Doug Stanhope. So yeah. that it was basically just them talking and me trying not to fuck it up. But
you know, Henry Phillips,
Frank Caliendo, yeah. Sebastian Maniscalco, John Reap, Phil Hendry. I don't know if you know who Phil Hendry is. He's a big radio guy. He's got a syndicated show. Very funny. Yeah. Mike McRae. Yeah, I mean, I had any comics. I had one episode with a mystery guest.
Yeah.
I don't know if you listened to that. It just, I forget what number it is, but it just says, it's just got a picture of like a question mark, and it says mystery guest, and that's a funny, that's probably one of the funnier ones, because I won't say who it is if anybody wants, you just have to listen to it, but after a lot of times, like, to me, like, you know me, so you just sent me a message and said, hey, you want to do my podcast?
Right.
I'm sure you've contacted people that you don't know to try to get to do your podcast, so that's what I would do. But as a comic, you know, I'm talking to other comics, and I would, sometimes I would go up and meet them, and we had a mutual friend, and then that would be my in, and I'd be like, hey, you want to do my, like, I had Jim Jeffries on it, and my in was that, you know Sean Rouse?
Yeah.
Very funny comic, Sean Rouse.
Yeah.
And I knew Jim Jeffries knew him, so I went up and talked to him and said, hey, I was friends with Sean Rouse, and then I asked him if he wanted to do my podcast, and he was like, yeah, sure. So I always have an in talking to somebody. Well, this guy, the comedian who's, I'll call the mystery guest, I just sent him I sent him an email off of his website and just said, hey, you want to, I have a podcast, you know, I come up and we can do it in the green, I can come to your hotel, we can do it in the green room between one of your shows, before a show, after a show, whatever. Whatever's easiest for you,
right,
is basically what, and he was like, yeah. He's like, no problem, let's do it, like, between shows on Saturday. So we sit in the green room, we're doing it, and it just wasn't going well, and I could tell he didn't want to do it. And it's not a big deal, and if at any point he had said, because it's not like I drove across, I mean, it takes me like 15 minutes to get there, but it didn't matter. If the guy didn't want to do it, all he had to say was, we don't have to, you know, I really don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And I could tell he wasn't into it, and it just wasn't going well. It wasn't funny. It wasn't, and he just wasn't really giving me any decent answers to the questions and stuff. And I think I even said once or twice, I was like, do you want to do this? And he was like, yeah, man, no problem. And,
when clearly his face said, this is fucking
yeah. Yeah, and then it got to the end, and I was like, okay, and he was like, oh, well, that, you know, after it was turned off, he was like, it really wasn't very funny, and I was like, eh, you know, I go, the thing with my podcast was, obviously, I wanted it to be hilarious, but most of it, and when you're with friends and stuff, like, I had Greg Warren on it, you know, when I have, like, my buddies, people I know, you know, you talk about stuff, and, you know, funny stuff happens, or you talk, you know, you tell stories or whatever. And but a lot of the episodes I'm just like interviewing a comedian, because I'm asking them questions that, you know, that I want answers to, you know, or that I think people want to stuff, not like delving too personally,
yeah,
but just like, you know, talking about comedy and stuff. So I was like, eh, you know, I mean, my podcast is not necessarily the funniest podcast out there. I mean, I don't know if I should necessarily say that, but and then like the next day he sent me a text saying he didn't want, could you not post that? And I was like, yeah, no problem. And then a couple days later, I was like, you know what? Fuck this dude. He didn't tell me, you know, when I showed up, he could have said, oh man, I really don't want to do it. And I'd have been like, okay, no problem. Yeah. So then I posted it, but I took out his name,
yeah,
you know, anytime, like there was no intro of his name. And I made it I did like DVD commentary. So like, it'll go for like a minute or something, and then you'll hear, and then I just dubbed in my own.
Yeah.
Okay, now at this point, I knew this wasn't going well. So, it's the mystery episode on the Enjoy Guys podcast.
Yeah.
Enjoyguys.com. I'm sure people think it's some sort of a gay podcast. Might not be the best title.
Right.
But it couldn't be the worst either.
No, I don't think it's the worst. I'm sure there's, you know, some sort of Enjoy Cock podcast or something. Can we be dirty on here?
Sure,
it's a podcast,
yeah,
right? We can do it.
Nobody's listening anyway, so.
Yeah.
I watch this. Will be the episode that's like 5,000.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I heard you said cocks a lot. Let's listen to that one.
Well, that's kind of what's funny. I mean, like, you were talking about yours being, you know, funny, but it's like, it's kind of what's fun about podcasting is that they can be whatever, you know, they don't always have to be the funniest one or the whatever. It's just, I find it just interesting to have a nice conversation with people. And then,
yeah, you know, well, like I said, when I, interview, like I said, if I'm with my friends or, you know, guys I really know, then of course, you know, it's easier to be funny and, yeah. and stuff when you're, you know, you're talking about stories. But like I said, I also, when I'm doing mine, I just like to, I'm just trying to interview, you know, cause I figure people want to hear, but once again, I don't know exactly what people want to hear. You know, obviously the episodes of mine that have gotten the most downloads are the ones with Dave Attell.
Sure.
And, you know, the Phil Hendry one. Yeah, you know, I mean, the guests. Yeah. So when, I guess what I was saying before about doing it with my buddy Gerald, we were doing the podcast together, and then he moved to New York, so I really had to try to find people to be on the show, because doing a podcast by yourself is very, it's very hard. Yeah. To do it, and not from like a technical standpoint, from just
creating content.
Yeah, exactly. Creating content, because first of all, you're by yourself. So if you're not talking, and like even if you listen to a radio show, and the radio person is by themselves, I'm not even. I mean, even a DJ at a radio station that, you know, they're not a talk show. They're just a DJ. Well, 9 times out of 10, there's still there's somebody else on the other side of the glass,
right,
turning knobs and stuff, so they can at least play it. Even if no one realizes it, they're saying funny stuff and they're getting a reaction from at least one person.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sitting by yourself in your apartment,
yeah,
and you're talking about stuff and like you're laughing, and I'm laughing at something, I'm like, are people going to think I'm a psycho because I'm laughing? So I try to listen to I used to listen to Bill Burr's podcast a lot, because he, you know, like Marc Maron does it by himself, but he's also, he only does like, you know, 10-15 minutes by himself, if that, and then he's got a guest on it. Mm-hmm. Bill Burr, 9 times out of 10, is doing it completely by himself.
And so he points it out a lot too.
Yeah, well, and
it's like, I'm a psycho just sitting here by myself in this hotel room talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to not have, I mean, being a comedian, we have to have the reaction of the crowd. You know, nobody does stand up in an empty room.
Right.
You know, I don't care. You know, you put Louis C.K. whatever. You put the greatest. I wouldn't say Louis C.K. is the greatest comedian, but you know, you put Dave Attell in an empty room and doing comedy, and you listen to a CD. You might think it's funny, but there's no way you're going to think it's the funniest thing you've ever heard. Sure. If it was, because there has to be laughter.
Isn't that Didn't Harlan Williams just put out a special where like it's just him in the desert or something like that, and like there's no, it's like his whole comedy special is just him, and like,
I don't know, I hadn't heard about that, but
yeah, but it's like I haven't watched it, but it's just like he's always got those weird ideas like that.
I'm sure somebody's probably done something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Maria Bamford did that special at her parents' house, where it was just like her parents and obviously somebody running the kit, you know, so there might have been, maybe there was 5 people there,
right.
But yeah, that's, so yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I stopped, because it was, and whatever, I mean, I got lazy was the main reason I stopped, but doing it by myself, if I didn't, you know, it's not by myself if I have a guest. Well, sometimes, yeah, you know, you gotta try to put out an episode, you gotta put them out consistently, you know, whether you're doing it once a week, twice a week, whatever days you do it on, or you're gonna put it out, you gotta put it out on those days consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to do it by myself, I don't know. I just found it weird. But, yeah. I mean, lazy was the being lazy was the main part.
Yeah, we
plus the fact of doing stuff and you're not, it's fun for a while, but then like if you're not getting any money for it or anything,
yeah,
it's like, well, geez, I could be sitting here watching TV instead of talking into my microphone and possibly gaining fans for something that could possibly turn into. I would always put fake sponsors like at the end.
Yeah,
at the end of my podcast, I'd be like, I would just like see something and be like, this episode of the Enjoy Guys podcast is brought to you by wallets. Here's something to put your money in, wallets.
Yeah.
So you think that's probably like extremely frustrating, like you said, you know, doing it by yourself, you always have to try and create something. So being a comic yourself, do you feel like it's annoying that people always expect you to be funny?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say,
like, oh, you're a comedian for a living, you've got your phone, tell me a joke. It's like, that's not what I do.
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes people say that, but it doesn't happen as as much as you would think. But also, if somebody ever says that to me, if I say anything to them, it's more like, just hang out with me for 5 minutes. I'm sure something funny will happen. I mean, you can get into a whole, you know, not argument, but a whole talk with people about how it's, most stand-up comedians don't just have jokes that you can tell that are, a joke that you just tell somebody is not the same as what you do in a club.
Yeah.
Most comedians don't just tell regular jokes like that.
Right, it's all about the setup. And...
Yeah, well, right. It's the setup and it's the atmosphere of, you know, you can see somebody like Mitch Hedberg at a club and he's hilarious, but if he told, you know, if you tried to tell a Mitch Hedberg joke to somebody, or even if he told it to somebody just not on stage, you'd be like, okay, weirdo.
Yeah.
Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, it's all got to be in context.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
the context of being in a, you know, the right atmosphere.
Sure.
Like I said, if somebody tells, yeah, it's like, yeah, of course I could tell you a horrible joke book joke, but
yeah.
That doesn't really happen very much, though, to be honest with you.
Right.
But I also don't put myself in those positions. I try not to hang out with regular folks.
Only the stars for Bob. So that enjoy guys line, that's from your a bit in your, and you also named the CD after that. So if you
well, you want to hear me tell a joke?
Yeah, if you want.
Want to hear me tell that joke? You ever had a conversation with someone and they emphasize the wrong words as they're talking to you, so it doesn't make sense like it's supposed to? Here's my example. I'm out there the night with a buddy of mine. It's late. We're kind of drunk. We end up at IHOP. We're getting something to eat, right? Waiter takes our order, comes back with our food. As he sets our food down, he says, "Enjoy, guys." I'm like, "Enjoy, guys? What the hell's in these pancakes?" There's some visual cues that you don't get to see on the podcast, but it's a classic bit. You could call it my signature bit. But it also has to be in context, because like when I sell my CDs after the show, if I've got like my CD set up and I don't do that joke in my act, somebody will walk up and be like, "Enjoy, guys, fag." And I'm like, "No, no, it's a bit in my act. I just forgot to do it." It makes no sense. It's not gay.
Right.
I was trying to think of different names for my podcast, and finally one of my buddies was just like, "Just call it the Enjoy Guys Podcast."
Right.
And I was like, okay. I thought of calling it the Pod Bigger Staff Bobcast. But somehow someone talked me into Enjoy Guys.
Yeah.
So.
Do you like going into a show, do you... like write out a kind of a set list, or do you, I mean, already, like, I don't know. I look at, like, you know, you go, a band goes on the stage and they got their, what they're going to play for the night and things. I mean, do you have like a kind of a mental set list of jokes you want to
hit? Well, I certainly think it's different for a band, because if they need to have a set list that everybody knows what they're doing.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously it's not like the lead singer can't go, "Hey, we're doing this song now," but instead of having to do that, you know, especially if they like get done with a song and they want to just go right into the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as a, you know, if you have a band, obviously,
right.
If it's somebody just playing acoustic guitar, they can play whatever they want. So, I mean, I can just go on stage and just, you know, pull from everything in my, you know, in my act.
Right.
But I usually, almost all the time, I go on stage and I have a little napkin that'll have some notes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just for jokes that I want to do, usually newer stuff, just so I don't forget to do it. I mean, I don't have like the whole set list there, but
sure.
I'll just have a couple of, if I'm working on something new or just maybe an old joke that I want to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's for me as a fan, like I like the kind of you know, a looseness in a show where comic will like get, you know, improv more into it with the crowd participation and things. And I've seen some guys, it just seems way too rehearsed, you know, like it'll be like verbatim to their album, you know, and it's like, man, this is, you know, I would have bought, you know, I've already listened to the CD. Yeah, I've already listened to the CD and then come out.
Well, it's very, like, you brought up, you know, like music, that's the difference between music and comedy is that with music, people want to hear.
Yeah.
What's, you know.
They want to hear it just like the album, yeah.
You go see the Rolling Stones, you don't give a shit about their new album.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know you're going to play something, you know, or even worse, you go see somebody who only has like one or two songs.
Yeah.
And they're like, here's some of our new album. It's like, okay, when are you going to get the two Princes, Spin Doctors? When are you going to play Safety Dance?
Yeah.
Men Without Hats?
My buddy told me a story.
But with comedy, people don't want to see that. If you do stuff in the vein of how musicians do, people are like, he did like the same thing last time I saw him.
Right.
It's much different with comedy than it is with music.
I had a buddy who saw Deep Blue something years ago, and they came out and they had that hit Breakfast at Tiffany's, and they played that was like the first song they started with. They're like, all right, here it is. If you want to hear it, like if anybody else, if you just came for this one song, here it is. And then like everybody like left after that. Like
Leon did something similar to that too, where they played a bunch. They saved the one song that everybody wanted to hear to the very end.
Yeah. So
like, cause we know if we play this song, everybody's going to
leave. Yeah. I can't believe that they would play it first.
Well, I think they were pretty much, you know, they were,
I don't want to fucking play this song anymore.
Yeah, right.
Probably their other stuff. They did shows and they waited to the end and people were just like, come on!
Play the damn breakfast song.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I always find it funny, you know, like you mentioned some of the stuff, but Tom Petty, like I saw him live and he just did all the hits and then like right in the middle he's like, okay, we're gonna play some new songs, and he just like watch everybody get up and go to get a beer and pee and then come back and end the night
up. Well, yeah, if you're right, and if you're a band that's, you know, been around forever and has a ton of hits, they're still, you know, like I said, but no, I mean, I don't know if Tom Petty's still putting out, but say something, you know, when's the last time the Rolling Stones had a hit song?
Right.
You know, if I say the 90s, it was probably the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, they're still making albums, and, you know, obviously people are buying them, but when you go see them, you know, you want to hear the hits.
Sure.
But they, you know, everybody sprinkles in.
Yeah.
They always sprinkle in new stuff.
Yeah.
Journey's another one of those bands that kind of did the same thing where they just recently put out a new album. They're like, fine, if you don't want to hear that stuff, we won't play it. We'll just play what you want to hear because that's what you came to hear, so that's what we'll just play. We're not even going to attempt to even try this anymore. It's like we've tried, you didn't want it, so we just do it for ourselves. And
somebody like Journey has so many hits. I mean, if they want to play one or two songs that I haven't heard, okay, that's fine. But like anything more than two, I don't know how many I don't know how many songs bands, you know, play at a concert.
Right.
But, you know.
Do you listen to a lot of music when you're traveling, or do you?
Yeah, I got Sirius satellite radio in my car.
Yeah.
But I listen to like the 80s. I listen to the 80s channel, Howard Stern.
Yeah.
I don't really listen to a lot of comedy.
Yeah, I was wondering if this was what I was going to ask next. If you know, obviously you listen to a lot of comedy every weekend, you know, with the people that you're working with, but it's like I was wondering if you listen to any, you know, on your in your free time and stuff as a fan or anything, but
not really.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to listen to a lot more. I watch guys like on late night shows. I'll watch, you know, if I see a friend or somebody I'm interested in, I'll, you know, and they're doing a stand up set, I'll watch one of those, but. Just listen, you know, the satellite radio has so much, there's so many comedy channels. Mm-hmm. I think, well, so many. I think there's like three or four.
Yeah.
But, so there's a lot of stuff on there. I mean, you know, if you listen for more than 5 minutes, I mean, you end up hearing somebody famous, but there's also, you know, there's a lot of crap on there too, just like the music.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes I try to watch, you know, different specials, but I don't know. I get bored watching watching other people sometimes.
Yeah. Who were some of the influences that got you into to doing this stuff?
Got me into doing comedy?
Yeah.
Honestly, like, when I was a kid, I liked, like, the first album, it was a tape, comedy tape I ever bought was Bill Cosby himself.
Yeah.
How about Bill Cosby? What's he up to lately? that was the first comedy album I ever bought when I was a kid, and I remember seeing that's like the first comedy special, because it was a special. I remember seeing it on HBO. I don't know if it was necessarily an HBO special. It was probably, but the Bill Cosby himself. That was like the first stand up thing I remember that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like the only stand up of Bill Cosby's that I ever heard. I mean, I knew who Bill Cosby was, and then, you know, we'll say that was in the early 80s, and then The Cosby Show came out, you know, and I watched that. But, like, I remember watching The Tonight Show, and I'm 43. I was born in 1971, and I remember in the early 80s, watching The Tonight Show, and I used to I like Johnny Carson. I liked Rich Little. I liked Buddy Hackett. I liked the Three Stooges. I didn't really watch a lot of stand-up. There wasn't a lot of stand-up unless you saw it on The Tonight Show.
Right.
That was the only. And I don't remember really watching a lot of stand-up. I remember watching The Tonight Show, but I don't remember really any stand-ups. And then when HBO started doing like their Rodney Dangerfield Young Comedian specials. Yeah. I remember watching those, but like the first one of those I really remember was like the one that like Andrew Dice Clay and Sam Kinison that they were on. And then I remember seeing one in the late 80s that Dennis Miller hosted that had like Ray Romano and Andy Kindler and Rob Schneider. So I remember watching those, but I never thought about doing, I mean, first time I did stand-up was when I was in college, like my second semester in college. There was a comedian playing on campus. I went to the University of Houston. And, you know, if you went to college, did you go to college?
Just community college.
You ever have a comedian there?
No, I don't think so.
Well, comedians play all over, you know, at college. Yeah. So they had some comedian. I didn't know who he was. I'd never seen him before. He'd been on, like, Evening at the Improv. And
right.
Very funny guy. And he came in a day early. And there was a sign up on camp. There were signs up on campus saying, "You want to be a stand up comedian? You know, come to this room at this time." So I go to me and I get there. There's like five other guys in there, and what the guy had done. Because when you do a show at a college, most of the time it's one comedian and they have to do an hour, and you don't know where the show's going to be. It could be in an auditorium. It could be,
yeah.
It could be in a cafeteria. It could be in a hallway. It could be, you know, it could be in a not a good prime spot for comedy. Well, his show was in this big auditorium, which was nice because it had a controlled audience as opposed to people just walking by as you're doing it. But we met in this classroom and in another smaller auditorium the day before. And we just, you know, I don't think anybody in there had ever done stand-up before. And we told them our jokes and put together like a 5-minute routine, and then he was like, "All right, I'll see you guys tomorrow." And we were like, "For what?" And he said, "Oh, you guys get to open for me." So there was like five of us, and we all did like 5 minutes, and he hosted it, and then he closed the show, you know, doing like another 45 minutes. So it ended up being like a, you know, an hour and a half show as opposed to just him doing an hour.
Yeah.
And it was smart because obviously all of us invited our friends, so there had to have been, you know, 50 more people at the show because he had us on it than there would have been, because he wasn't a famous comic or anything, and, you know, free something like that on campus, you know, some people, and you at that time U of H didn't have a lot of people didn't live on campus. It's still a commuter school, so it was something to get people out. But so that was the first time I did it. I only did it because, I mean, I thought I was funny. So I figured, oh, I'll try it. And then I went to a couple open mics. this is like in 1991, but then I stopped going for like 8 years, and then I got a job at the Laugh Stop Comedy Club, and that was my introduction. You know, I got to meet all the comedians, and it's a good way. You know, if you want, I always tell people, if you're interested in doing stand-up comedy, and you can do it, getting a job at a club as like a doorman is a good job, because first of all, you're working there, so yes, you're working,
but you can hear everything.
But yeah, you get to see the show, you know. And then if you're not working, obviously, since you work there, you can come up and see the shows. Mm-hmm. So you can always, you know, you can always get in for free or whatever.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, you know, if you're the doorman and you're inside the club, yeah, you're watching the you know, you're getting to watch the shows. It's a great tool. But also, when I first thought that there was no internet, or the internet was, you know, now you can, every single person in the world has access to all the stand-up comedy almost on the internet. So
I get that a lot, just being a fan. You know, I'm at the club a lot, and everybody always assumes that I want to be a comic and stuff, and I'm like, I have no desire to get on stage. I just to enjoy watching the shows. And but you know, that's the whole thing. You're kind of, they see you hanging around a lot.
I found that a lot of people that work at comedy clubs, not like at, if you want to say like Westport here, because the waitresses have all been there like 30 years. but most people that work at comedy clubs want to do comedy.
Right.
I've been amazed at how many people. They'll be like, yeah, you know, I did the open, you know, they'll at least try an open mic once. Because, you know, you got to figure, you know, if you want to wait tables, well, you know, you can wait tables anywhere. Why do you go to a comedy club? I mean, you can make good money at a comedy club because it's a high volume in a short amount of time. And people do make good money waiting tables at comedy clubs. But it's like, all right, well, you can wait tables anywhere. Why did you choose to work at a comedy club?
Right.
Because they, you know, they assume. I'm guessing people assume it's going to be fun. It's going to be funny.
Sure.
But I've kind of figured out that like at least half the people that work at comedy clubs want to do comedy.
Right.
At some point, it comes out to where they. Some people, you're just like, all right, I can tell that girl. That girl wants, you know, she's just being. That girl's trying to be way too funny.
Yeah, I've always thought about just giving it a shot just to say I did it, but I wouldn't even know where to start because I don't know what's funny. I just talk and people laugh sometimes, and sometimes they look at me like I'm retarded. And
well, that's the hard, that's the hardest part, is going on stage the first time. Whenever, you know, people ask me all the time, they're like, because it, like in Houston, I'm one of the guys that's been around the longest. And, you know, I also have, it's not even so much that I've been around the longest, but I have, you know, some TV credits. So people assume I know what I'm doing. So when new guys come around and they're like, and somebody's like, yeah, Bob, you know, Bob's been on TV, ask him. So guys will ask me for advice who like just, and it's always usually somebody who just starts out, and I'm nice to them, but then I kind of end up saying, well, how many times have you been on stage? And they're like, like five. And I always say, I go, don't take this the wrong way. I said, but you don't know anything. I go, come back to me when you've been on stage 50 times. I go, and you still won't know anything, but at least I can tell you. I go, anything I'm going to tell you is like past your pay grade right now. I can't tell you anything I tell you. You won't know how to apply anything I tell you because you don't know anything.
Yeah, because I've heard a lot of, you know, interviews with different comics. They always say that you got to do it at least for 10 years or more till you finally get it. What's going to make people laugh? Not necessarily like forced to be funny, but you know what, if you say this in a certain way, what's going to get a reaction out of somebody?
Yeah,
know?
I mean, there's
and how you say it and what crowd you say it to. And
yeah, I mean, you could make a, well, and also I tell people, now whatever I'm telling you is not fact.
Right.
I'm just telling you this from my perspective because there are, sure, there's, you know, there's guys who don't hit it, become famous until they've been doing it for 10, 20 years. How long was Louis Black doing comedy before he became huge?
Yeah.
And there's guys who do it for a couple of years. Three, four, you know.
Sure.
There's guys that do it for, you know, some people are funnier than other people. Some people, you know, are able to figure out whatever, they're able to figure out how to be funny faster than, you know, it took me really about 5 years of doing it before I was like, I think I can stand on stage and make people laugh for like a half hour. It took me like 5 years to get to that point. But a half hour is just feature act. That's not headlining. And then it took a couple more years before I ever like got to headline a show. So I mean, there's no time. Everybody likes to, you know, they compare themselves to other people. Oh, you know, you always compare yourself to guys you started with, and it's like, oh, you know, I'm doing this, and he hasn't even done this, and it's like, well, if you compare yourself to other people, you know, unless you're just already a superstar, people are going to catch up to you. People are going to pass you. It's going to happen.
Sure.
So, I mean, you're only asking for trouble if you're going to compare yourself to other people. I mean, I guess people do it in all, you can do it in all sorts of jobs, but this is also something where, you know, it's show business to where literally you can go from the classic outhouse to the penthouse. You know, you can be a nobody that maybe a few people know, you know, and you're not making that much money, and then whatever, you get to do a late night show, and
right.
Conan O'Brien's like, hey, we want to do a show with you, and whatever, you can end up having a TV show, you know. So it's certainly stuff like that doesn't really happen in real life from the standpoint of, let's say, like, you have a janitor and the vice president of a company. They're not like, all right, we have two candidates for the president of the company, for the, you know, the president died, and it's the vice president and it's the janitor.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're not going to pick the second highest guy and the lowest guy to be up for the same job. But in comedy, theoretically, you know, that could happen. You could be up for a part, whatever, for a part on a sitcom where it's like, well, we've got Frank Caliendo and we've got Bob Biggerstaff for this part as the, you know, this guy's best friend on this show. And that could, you know,
that
could happen. And the lower person, me, could get the part. And so there's a lot of, you know, that's what makes, you know, all the, if you want to say, jealousy and that happens in comedy. But you just have to realize, like, and I'm really under the, what do you want to say? If you're doing comedy and you're funny, eventually everybody gets their chance to do something. You might not exactly know when that chance is, but I think if you're funny, you know, unless you quit, you've got no chance of doing anything. You know what I mean? If I quit doing comedy, I'll never have a TV show.
All right.
That's a guarantee I can make. But as long as I'm still doing comedy, yeah, I have a chance at doing a lot of stuff related to it. So, you know, it just, everybody's different. I've known guys that the first time, Mike McRae, first time I saw him on stage, I was like, wow, that guy's pretty funny. And it's only seeing somebody do like 5 minutes. You know, obviously it's not like he's got 45 minutes at that point. Everybody, you keep building, but you can tell some people. I just, you know, I didn't study comedy or anything. I just wrote down stuff that I thought was funny and said it on stage. I didn't like, I mean, nowadays, you know, you can just Google, not that it's necessarily the best advice, but you can just Google how to do stand-up, how to write a joke, how to, so you can, you know, there's, I did some research when I first started. Like, I got the worst book ever. It was a book by Richard Belzer that was called, like, How to Be a Stand-Up Comedian. But it was so, it was kind of a joke, like, kind of a parody book like that. But, like, there was some real advice, but then there'd be, like, stuff, I guess, that was supposed to be funny. But I fucking hate Richard Belzer. I don't know how, I mean, I understand that, yeah, he's when you're a comic and you're known for being on Law and Order,
yeah,
that's all you need to know about how good of a comic somebody is. Like, really, you're known for being on a dramatic show?
Right.
No, he's not known for, I mean, you know, unless you're fucking 70, nobody fucking knows who Richard Belzer is as a comedian. And he was also one of the judges when I was on Last Comic Standing,
yeah,
when I was in Vegas, so fuck him.
How was that? Was that an interesting experience doing that show? Was that, I mean, that...
Yeah, it was cool. It was like 2008. It was the year Eliza Schlesinger won.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, getting to go to Vegas. I mean, obviously, I wish things would have been a lot different if I made it to the house. That was bad. Yeah. I think that was the last time they did the house.
Yeah.
It would have been hugely different. So it's very weird. It's very weird sitting backstage and sitting there and being like, I'm 3 minutes, and I had to do a 3-minute set in Vegas, and just thinking, I'm 3 minutes away from changing my life.
Right.
Like, it's just getting into the house, I still got a lot of, even though I didn't make it into the house, I still, like, you know, the next week, you know, Matt emailed me or called me and was like, because I'd featured there a couple times, and they wanted to have me headline, so it got me headlining work. So it bumped me up,
yeah,
as far as more money and, you know, headlining. But it's just very weird sitting. Like, if I had made it to the house, I would have been headlining everywhere.
Right.
Whether I was, let's say, I think they took 12 people to the house. Whether I got 12th place, or second or first, obviously, I would have gotten a lot more work. And a lot of it's just, you know, getting that chance to work somewhere. And also at that point, because I would have been on TV, I would have, you know, it would have been more money than normal, you know, because you assume more people are going to come to the show.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows if that would have lasted till now. But, I mean, you know, look at Tommy John again. Yeah. Tommy John, he'd been on Letterman 2 or 3 times, and it didn't, you know... I think it got him. I think he got some, like, behind the scenes stuff where I think because he's had like 3 deals with different networks, and so I think he got one of those at that time. But like it wasn't doing anything for him at the clubs. It might have gotten him a little more work, but like doing those late night shows doesn't really, it gets you some work, but it doesn't which in turn, because if you're getting more work, you're getting more money. But it's not like a club he was working at before was like, oh, we're going to pay you $2,000 more because you just did Letterman.
Right.
But then when he gets second place on Last Comic Standing, his price goes through the roof. So
even though he's the same comedian he was, yeah, you know, right then.
I was the same comedian just by being on there. I got more work. I got more work, but which, like I said, is obviously more money because it's more work.
Yeah.
But it's not like I wasn't getting... it's not like they said, oh, well, normally we would pay you this, but we'll double it now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they did double it because it was like from feature to headliner. That's usually how the money goes. It doubles. But I wasn't getting like double headliner pay because I, you know, but I got, you know,
yeah,
more money, but not, I don't know what I'm trying to say. But you get it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Last Comic Standing, you know, it's as a comic, the most, what I'm proud of most is being on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Is doing Live at Gotham. Not to be confused with that show on Access TV, Gotham Live. This was on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
That's what I'm most proud of as a comic, because it's like, yes, I'm a comedian. I've been on the Comedy Channel, Comedy Central. But, like, 500,000 people watch those stand-up things.
Mm-hmm.
From the shows like Live at Gotham, the, you know, the multi-comedian shows, like now they got that John Oliver stand-up,
yeah,
or like Adam Devine's...
Dave Attell's Underground.
Yeah, stuff like that, you know, it's like 500,000, you know, and people watch that. Well, Last Comic Standing, it's like 5 million.
Yeah.
The only way you can be, you know, and if you do Letterman or Conan, that's not even a million, or it might be right around a million. So none of those shows are as good as being on primetime,
mm-hmm,
NBC, CBS, ABC, or Fox.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, you have to be on a TV show. So being on Last Comic Standing, like I said, millions of people get to see you. So from a popularity standpoint, way more people tell me they've seen me on Last Comic Standing than anything. And when somebody says they see me on Comedy Central, I'm like, oh, okay, I know that person is a real comedy fan. And it's usually somebody younger, of course, you know. It's usually older people that say they've seen me on Last Comic Standing. Like, but you can't buy that. And also, the thing about Last Comic Standing is, like, comedians don't want to do contests because comedy is subjective.
Sure.
I've done shows with Dave Attell and people are like, oh, you were so much funnier than him. And it's like, you say thank you, but you want to be like, okay, well, I mean, he's one of the greatest stand-up comics ever. You want to be like, I appreciate the fact that you enjoyed my set better because I know people like different things.
Sure.
Maybe you're a fat guy and you like more of my fat, you know what I mean? People like different things.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm doing a show with Dave Attell and, you know, if half the people are telling me I was better than him, then I would be like, well, first of all, I wouldn't be featuring for him. I would be, you know what I mean? I would be doing my own shows.
Right.
But, people like different things. So doing comedy, which is subjective, any sort of performance is subjective. You can judge. There's no, you watch a basketball game, any sporting event. Well, it's a team that scores the most points wins. Well, how do they get those points? Because they do a specific thing. Basketball, you put the ball in the goal. If you make it from here, it's 2 points. You make it from here, it's three. That's cut and dry. There's no... Mm-hmm.
Like niche comedy kind of...
Well, it almost went in. Well, then it didn't go in, so he doesn't get the points. Right. It's cut and dry as to whether you make a basket or not.
Yeah.
But in comedy, if they're like, all right, so when people... For Last Comic Standing, if you know... When you realize it's a contest, I mean, you should from the beginning, but you're also thinking, I was funnier than that guy. I am funnier than that guy, that girl. Yeah. Well, people are, other people. It's a TV show.
Sure.
They're picking what they want, and it's a TV show that is, they want. How do they appeal to the most people? Well, have all different kinds of people, whether it be white, black, yellow, fat, skinny, morbidly obese, whatever. You have all, You have all different kinds of people.
Yeah.
Handicapped person, whatever. That's what, it's a TV show to appeal to the demographic. So once I had that in my head that all I could control was what I did on stage, it made it hurt a little less when I didn't get picked, like, to go to the house.
Yeah.
Even though I'm standing on stage clapping going, are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking, as they're saying some people's names, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? If they could zoom in on my face, you would see me saying that. But I was kind of in the shadows because once they pick the person, they put like the spotlight on them.
Right.
So,
I talked to Ben Kronberg a while back, at a show, and how his whole experience with Last Comic and how like that whole blew up with him. And,
he was the guy with the what did he do?
Roseanne told him to fuck off on the show, and
because what did he do on? Because he was just like he was being like really bored.
Yeah. He was doing obviously.
He opened up with a stupid joke about
He sit there looking at his notes. He's like, "Oh, you guys go to work right away."
And which is just an old, whether it's funny or not, it's just an old hack joke.
Yeah. But he, I don't know. They obviously being a TV show, they can cut it up the way they want. But it I guess the crowd. The way they show it on TV, the crowd didn't respond, and then Roseanne didn't, and then he said something back, some smart ass to Roseanne, and then she told him to fuck off, and then obviously, it blew up online. And,
yeah.
And then people started hashtagging all that stuff on Twitter and things, and
I wouldn't doubt it if he got, he probably got some gigs out of it.
Yeah, he definitely rode the wave as much as he could. Like, he would hit the road right after all that and then, tried to capitalize on that moment, so. It definitely
That's worked. A little different, but it's still, you take what you can.
Sure. Yeah, it's a...
I tell anybody, I'm like, any sort... We don't want to do comedy... Comedians, don't want to do comedy contests because the only time a comedy contest is good is if you win or you at least get something out of it.
Yeah.
To just, to just be in a contest, and obviously if you win, it's great, whatever the contest is. If you're winning, I win, okay, so I win money. Whatever you do, isn't there a contest going on at Westport right now?
Yeah, there's a...
What's the prize? It's probably some work, at least.
Probably, I think more stage time and all. And, I
and
think,
probably
I think
some money if you win.
Yeah, I think it's a cash.
Yeah, so is that going to make anybody a superstar? No, but if you're getting something out of it, then that's good. So I tell anybody, I'm like, especially if there's contests for Last Comic Standing or something to do with Comedy Central. I mean, that's how I got on Comedy Central. There was a contest. I didn't really want to do it. It was called Open Mic Fight. I was like, I don't want to do a contest that has the words open mic in it, but it's for Comedy Central. So I just uploaded a video, and they picked me to be like one of the 90 semifinalists where they did shows in 9 different cities with 10. So you got 90 people. They'd have 9 cities, and there's 10 comedians in each city. It was 10 cities with 9 comedians, and I know that because they took the winner from each city. So you've got 10. You've got 9 guys. What do I say? 9 comedians, 10 cities, right?
Yeah.
You've got. No. 10 comedians in 9 cities. Because you take the first place people, so you've got 9 people that win each of those cities. You've got 9 winners because it's 9 cities. Then they took the second place person in each city and they put them in groups of 3. So you've got for 3 weeks they had one group of 3, then the next group of 3, and the third group of 3, and people would vote online on the Comedy Central website for one of those guys of each group of 3 would go to the finals to make it 12 people that went to the finals. Well, I upload a video. They call me. They say, "Hey, you're one of the 90. You're one of the 90 finalists." Or you're one of the 90 finalists. And I had picked, when you fill out a little form online, the closest city to where they were going to do one of those 10 cities was Austin. So I get to do a show there against 8 other comedians. I win that. I automatically get to go to the finals in LA. And then when the contest is when the prelims are done and there's 12 guys, we're all in LA. And if you won, you automatically got to be... And Mo Mandel, you know Mo Mandel?
Yeah.
He won the contest, and he got to automatically be on Live at Gotham. I think he might have gotten some money, but he automatically got to be on Live at Gotham, and I think Comedy Central was going to do, a CD with him. So he got to do a CD with him, too.
Right.
But I also knew that because it was a Comedy Central contest, they were going to pick people to be on whatever show... And at the time, it was Live at Gotham. They picked, there were 12 finalists, and 11 of us got to do Live at Gotham. There was some guy that was a little older, and they didn't pick him. But they also picked people, because in those cities, it was a legit contest, if you want to say, Last Comic Standing, and that people from Comedy Central were there judging the contest. They didn't, pick a radio DJ or the club.
Right.
The people from Comedy Central were there. Just like with Last Comic Standing, when you're in these, they go to these different cities, they have people... People with the show are judging you.
Yeah.
So they picked people who didn't even advance out of their city to be on the show too. So I always tell people, I'm like, if you have a chance to do something that has anything to do with TV or any sort of contest like that, do it.
Sure. What do you think of...
Some guys don't want to do that stuff because they're like, oh, I don't want to do a contest. And it's like,
yeah.
Well, I don't really want to do them either. But, I've had... You have 0% chance of being on Last Comic Standing if you don't audition for Last Comic Standing.
Sure.
Yeah, I would have, who knows if I would have been on Comedy Central if I didn't do that contest. I would like to think it would have happened anyway, but being in that contest certainly, that got me on there.
You see, they added Jeselnik as the host and Bill McDonald to the season.
I went out. I did an audition in Austin for that, and then I got a callback, and they flew me out to L.A., and I did really good at the callback, and then I thought for sure I was going to be on it, and they just didn't get back to me.
Yeah.
So, I think it's weird. Jeselnik's obviously trying to change his image.
Yeah.
Because I've never met the guy. I'm sure, like a lot of people, he seems like a douche. I don't know him. But I'm saying that because all I know is what I see in his stand-up.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, I can, you know, if this guy... But I don't know. I know nothing about him.
Yeah.
He seems like... Joe Rogan, I'm sure a lot of people think Joe Rogan's a douche, and he's one of the coolest guys I've ever met. So, I mean, I'll say you can't judge a book by its cover, but it's obvious that if anybody knows anything about Jeselnik, there's no way they have him host this if he's got to be trying to change his image. Because after he had his show, which was horrible, and he, you know, and like he doesn't do, I don't think he does Twitter anymore. Like he's, because, you know, he was one of those shock guys just being real dirty. And so he's got to be trying to change his image.
Yeah. I've met him twice at the Funny Bone, Westport, and he's a super cool guy. Little bit of interaction we had.
I've never met him. Yeah. So,
but he does come off like that, like a, you know.
Well, of course on stage, but I also, that's why I'm saying.
Sure.
Yes, he seems like a douche, but he could be the exact opposite. I've stopped judging people like that years ago.
Yeah.
From because I've, you know, like I said, even the first time I met Joe Rogan, I was like, I could just imagine. And then I was just like, oh, this guy's, he loves stand up comedy.
Yeah.
He's actually, you know, a really cool guy.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, we'll wrap this up, Bob. Appreciate you hanging out, man.
Sure, no problem. Get out of my room. What do you think of that sweet TV they got here at the Pantry Inn?
They are going all out in this room.
It's like it's a flat screen.
Yeah, well,
if you look
true,
at it.
That's true. But it's also got like a 6 foot tube.
It's one of those old flat. Yeah,
it
probably. I bet that probably weighs about 100 pounds, maybe. I remember when I got my flat screen, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and I had like I had a 39 inch box TV, and bringing my flat screen in, and I'm like, 47 inch, and it weighs like, I don't know, maybe it was 25 pounds, and I barely made it down the stairs without dropping my fucking, because I couldn't get my arm, you know, because it's TVs with those tubes are awkwardly, you know, the weight is not evenly distributed, and I almost dropped it coming down the stairs.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. That's another story.
Yeah, that's next episode.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out.
Rock, Paper, Podcast. Can I have this sticker? Or is this the only one?
Yeah, that's yours, man.
All right.
Limited edition.
I'll, send me a link. I'll post it.
Will do. Pick up Bob's album, Enjoy Guys.
Yeah, it's on iTunes. I don't have any hard copies, but obviously you can order it on iTunes. It's like $10.
Yeah.
I'm going to have another one. If anybody listens to this and they download my CD, send me an email and say that you downloaded my CD, and then when I make my new one, I'll send you a new one. I'm going to do another one. I'm going to do another one this year.
That's a pretty good
deal. I said that last year, but I'm definitely going to do it this year.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
All right. Episode 69, that's a wrap. Thanks again, guys.